Carnival Personnel was recorded in a dank, moldy basement.
Joe and Jacques, it's Carnival Personnel. Joe and Jacques, to their wives this show is their personal hell. Well, the show sounds the same every single week. Cats are great, Trump is lame, and Joe barely speaks. Who you think's still listening?
Who you think's still listening?
Besides Jim and Biff, yeah.
And don't forget Richard.
Here's a random review. No one cares about you two, Joe and Jacques.
Joe and Jacques, Joe and Jacques, Joe and Jacques.
Hey, Biff. Why are coffee beans such troublemakers?
Oh, Faith and Begora, why are coffee beans such troublemakers?
They always wind up in hot water.
Now, do you have another joke up your sleeve?
Well, first of all, I thought you
were gonna... Biff talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. I thought you
Biff's
were
the Irish pirate for some reason.
Irish pirate. I thought you were going to say, you know, because they're Colombian and they take a shot at my brother-in-law. But anyways, moving on. Hey, Biff.
These are the jokes, kid.
What did the ghost say to the hornets?
Great Caesar's ghost. What did the... What? What was the...
What did the ghost say to the hornets?
I don't know, but I'd be praying to Mary, Joseph, and the other one. That... The Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Oh my God, I forgot about the main one, the main event. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. What did the ghost say to the hornet?
Boobies! Boobies! See, it's a play.
God will get you for that one.
Hey, at least I remember who Jesus was, you dumb Irish pirate.
I'm drunk because it's the day of St. Patrick, you know, him. You know what he did.
Chase the snakes out of Ireland, which was really code for, anyways.
The gays.
And now there's no gay Irish people.
Thanks to St. Patrick. You're welcome, America. I don't know why I'm America. Anyways, this is Biff. You know Biff. Born in Japan, raised in Ireland.
Well, Toronto has a lot of Irish people. More Scottish, I think, than Irish. Anyways.
All right, get out of here, you Irish drunk. You. This
Hello,
is Joe.
Everybody, welcome to Carnival Personnel. And this is Jacques. Joe. What a delightful little couple weeks we've had in comedy.
Yes.
You know, my stuff we'll get to, which I know everyone wants to hear. But we, in the last, you know, couple weeks, the last week's guest, Sarah Infinity.
Takagi,
comedian, actress, composer, world-renowned pianist, was such a fabulous guest. That was just so much fun.
She was a delight.
You know, I have not...
We didn't ask her what her favorite curse word was.
Well, you know what? When her and Biff started talking and their native tongues, I'm pretty sure there was some Japanese.
You think there was some R-rated Japanese language being tossed back and forth that we don't know about?
I've heard Biff say enough things where I think I picked up round eyes at one point. I think, you know, which was directed at you, I think, specifically. But I could run it through the translator. But that was just such a fun talk. And we're going to go see her April 1st. And it turns out our really good friend Wayne Russell from Open Mic Pain is also on that same lineup with Infinity.
You know? Yeah. He's broken the seal. He's been doing booked gigs for a while now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's great to be, I mean, because it is so hard to get out and see friends just because of how much I'm going out now doing stuff that I don't get to just go to see friends shows, but two on one bill is absolutely fantastic. Two guests of our podcast. So, and then next week's guest, we recorded this 2 weeks ago. Next week's guest, we recorded it 2 weeks ago, and I don't think Joe and I have chatted for more than 30 seconds, of which that 30 seconds, 20 of it was talking about our chat with Tony V.
All right. Right. Tony V, the legendary Boston comic. Well, I mean, America's comic, really, but from Boston. We learned a little fact about him when we went to see Bobcat Goldthwait last weekend that I didn't know about when we did the interview, that he played the gorilla in the old American Tourister luggage commercials.
And so we will get to that in a second. But yeah, when we had him on the podcast, it was just great. This little community that you and I have cobbled together through talking to people on this little podcast, we got a hold of Tony through two sources. Our friend, you know, Lauren Sims, who's been on the podcast, who's a fabulous comic, and John Tobin, you know. Yes.
Thank you, Lauren, and thank you, John, and thank you, Tony, for taking – talk about an international call. I mean, we had people from other countries – you know, zoom in to our humble little podcast. But when you're, you know, interrupting, I guess somebody's, you know, he was working down in Aruba, Tony V was, for some, you know, he had like a book show down there, or several book shows. It was like some sort of, was it an event or festival or kind of just like a part of a package deal? I don't know what the...
An old Boston comic somehow started running a club down there in Aruba many years ago, and now the Boston Staples take turns going down there for a week at a time.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was calling from, like, his bungalow, and it almost didn't go through, but thankfully, you know, AT&T came through or whatever service they use down there for internet, made the chat happen, and... You know, yes, Dick Bucks were mentioned. Boston comedy fans, don't you fret. I know you were waiting to hear if there were any Dick Bucks mentioned from Dick Doherty's comedy clubs, and yes.
But yeah, and the fact that he's older than us and he didn't get frustrated that it took a few attempts to make the call happen with technology. And honestly, he's just such a pro. He really seemed like he enjoyed the conversation, which we know he probably did.
Yes. I mean, if there were awards for best acting during a podcast recording, he would be in contention for that performance.
We could make this podcast just about talking about next week's sideshow with Tony V, but we will almost move on. But yeah, at the same time, so we talked to him, you know, a little bit of an announcement next week. The week that podcast drops
is the week of the 25th.
Is the week of the 24th annual Boston Comedy Festival. Again, created by John Tobin and Jim McHugh. And Jim McHugh is still the end all be all of that. And part of the festival is he is giving Tony a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yes.
Which well deserved.
We touch on that in next week's podcast, and that's a funny exchange.
It really is. But last Saturday, and again, Joe and I have laughed probably more in the past 2 weeks than most people will all year, and it is just such a great thing to be able to laugh with a friend. But
the nitrous really helps.
It does. We went to see after the, you know, it was a few days. No, it was a week after or whenever. Yeah, a week after.
Well, a week, yeah.
We saw Tony with Bobcat Goldthwait. And it turns out they are best friends. Mm-hmm. Like thick as thieves, some people would say.
Yeah, they go way back.
And at first it was just painfully... a fun night all together, an intimate place off Cabot and Bedford, Beverly, Mass.
Yes.
What you want to tell them about where we sat with the prime seats that we got?
So at first, you know, it was general seating. There were just chairs lined up next to each other in front of the stage, and then there were tables along the edges, along the sides. And I sat in one of the regular chairs near the front, you know, probably like fourth row back or whatever, kind of a modest seating, but, you know, it was an okay view. But Jock's like, hey, I got a table. I was like, oh, nice. Okay, let's go see this table. And it's around the back, prime seating. The view reminded me of the old Boston Garden seating when you would have the obstructed view, because unfortunately there was a column right in front of the stage, not right in front of us, thankfully. So it wasn't like we were literally sitting behind a column, but like right in front of the stage in our view, more so in Jacques' view, because he took the bum seat to the right. So we had to do some shifting around, some creative engineering to make it so that both of us could see most of the show. But we, you know, we did have a table, so that was nice. And then I immediately spilled my beer on the table when I sat down.
It was one of those tables that, you know, it only had the one leg thing, but somehow it was uneven on itself. So, but here I am thinking I'm smart. It's like we walk in, the crowd's pretty full, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. How's there an empty table there? I somehow figured it all out.
Right. You're the guy also who sits in the empty seat on the subway. Like, come on, this is a perfectly good seat. Why is nobody sitting on this slightly discolored, odd-smelling, peculiarly moist seat? You know what? I'm going to take the chance. Opportunity to sit in this chair.
Guilty as charged. All the comedy shows I get to go to, be part of, that we've seen, I don't know if I've seen a better night of comedy. And what's great is it turns out management's best friend and her husband, who go to a lot of comedy shows, I would not have pegged her or him and her for big Bobcat fans, but they were, and they saw the show the night before. And honestly, and it wasn't an expensive ticket. Some of these shows out in the sticks, you know, out my way, like not in Boston and stuff like that, are more pricey. You know, yeah. I was pretty surprised.
But Bobcat's a man of the people. You know, he's not going to charge you an arm and a leg to go see him. You know, Tony V probably would have asked you to jack up the price, but he said no. You know, we're going to keep it modest. No, but they were both great. The host was fine. He was nice. He kept the energy up, and it was a good time despite the view.
I'm just gonna say this, Cutlicker Jones. Just if you get a chance to see,
I thought it was Clit.
Oh, is it Clitlicker Jones? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a harsher word that he would apply to that particular situation.
Yeah, you know
situation.
What? He is much more class than me. And what does that say about me, the Bobcat away?
Oh, gosh, yes. Shakes the Clown. You were dirtier than Shakes the Clown.
But the story of that tattoo that he has is just the greatest thing ever. And in between that, we had another sleepover. I don't know where management went. She had a friend's 50th birthday thing. They went to Boston for the night. So Joe came over, and once again, we partied like it was
1989. 1979.
69. We watched Batman 66. Oh, yeah. We watched an episode of that. We watched an episode of Get Smart.
You know what? It was 69 in more ways than one, if you know. Hi-o.
Ladies, not to be seen.
No girls allowed.
Yeah, our little clubhouse. It was. It was another night where, and it's 2:30 in the morning, 3:00, and at that point it's like, all right, let me make sure that there's clean blankets on the office, because Joe wasn't driving anywhere. It's not that we were drinking, but he was drunk with laughter at that point. It wasn't safe for him or anybody else to drive.
No, I was above the legal standard of yucks for driving that night.
And the night, and so I'm gonna intermingle it between the incredible last couple weeks I've had with my cry for help, mid-age crisis, getting back into this this little subculture of comedic wannabes. It's been pretty damn good. So that was last Saturday that, you know, that we had that. So we, the Joe came over on Saturday. Friday night, I hosted another show for Jim McHugh at a Smitty's, like 2+ hours away in Maine. Here was probably the best part of the night. The route takes me right past Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where Jim lives. So he's like, hey, let's meet at the club I usually work for Jim in and drive the other hour and a half together. And so just like F&H, the best part of F&H all those years was when I drove with John, or when I would drive home separately, but we would be on the phone the whole time together, basically making sure each one stayed awake. And, you know, it pretty much, that's about it, because driving home at 3 in the morning. But driving, you know, when I started driving with John, that was the best part. And of course, just shooting the shit in the parking lot for an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours after. That was always the best. So it was an incredible fun night getting to host. And this was the second time that I did a show for Jim in which I got to host. And that was fun. But just talking to him about comedy the whole way up, the whole way back, like 3 hours, just one-on-one having those conversations was a lot of fun. That night itself was a pretty good night. It was a pretty good night of 90-ish people, you know, at the Smitty's, which is a movie theater venue with the nice tables and the seats and all that. But that was a good night. And then, like I said, the next night, Joe came over. When did we go to City Winery? Have we talked about that yet?
Yeah, so the timeline that you're giving off is, because we've been off for 2 weeks. So
right.
Since our last podcast, we went to City Winery on a Friday. It might have been actually the Friday before the last recording. Okay. I'm having a senior moment. So did we go to City Winery in Boston the day before we went to see Bobcat?
Yeah, and then we talked to Xfinity before that, right? So
Infinity.
No one broke up with her, but so Jim's trying to do the podcast, is the streaming thing. Joe was nice enough to meet me at City Winery, which is way too nice of a place for me.
That's where I talked about having chicken with a spoon.
Yeah, okay, we got that.
We did talk about that. That was a while ago.
Thank you. So I did City Winery with him. That was great. Joe and I spent a few hours just in a little green room with him, just having
fun. Old news. Yeah, old news.
Then I get to drive with him, do another show. Then we see Bobcat. Then we have the sleepover and just, you know, that's insane. And then in the last week.
And then you have the Smitty's thing on Friday.
Right. Well, but the Thursday before, this past Thursday, Mike Katrobis has decided, you know what, there's a few people that he will work with one-on-one. And so basically, it was my first of probably a couple months of sitting down one-on-one, getting homework assignments from him, which are, I've already threw out my homework assignment. I need to describe my comedy, my stage personality, and one sentence.
I need a mission statement.
Yeah, I need a one-line bio. And Joe's going to write that for me. Anyways, moving on.
I know, pretty much. Let's spitball some ideas right here. One-line bio for Jacques' comedy.
Stop.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of silly to right now, because you're still in the nascent period of your comedy career. Like, people talk about, you know, long-term comedians have talked about like finding your voice, you know, and you really don't, like, the person you started off as, you've abandoned, you know, years in, because your style changes and you learn more and you grow more. So, I mean, yeah, I guess that's an okay thing to try to say, like, what kind of comic are you? How would you explain yourself? But I mean, most people are just like angry white guys who want to say what they want to say, you know, to a bunch of people and make people laugh. Like, it's like, that's kind of it. Like, I think if it's a broad net I'm casting with that one description of comedians.
Bobcat describes himself pretty great. Remember Bobcat's breakdown of his comedic stylings?
Well, what was that?
I'm a VHS comedian in a TikTok world.
See? There you go. Boom. There's your one sentence.
But that's his sentence, so I got to come up with one sentence.
How about you're a cross? You're a Czech. What do they call it? I guess you're a Czech hockey player in a no Czech world. Like, I don't know.
That's not too far off. But
it's not Czech hockey player because you're not from the Czech Republic. But anyway,
we might have a Czech Republic hockey player coming on at one point. You know, our friend Pavel Lat. Yeah, you, Biff, and I talked about that once. He literally had one of those amazing defection stories, like walking through a river carrying his infant child to escape Czechoslovakia. Okay. Strongest person I've ever grappled with on the ice. And there's no close second. Anyways, back to the comedy. So I got to this. So on Thursday, I got to work one-on-one with Mike, which was just a treat. I mean, it's probably the equivalent of having gone to 50 open mics trying to figure it out. We talked about that. We talked about the way to dissect a joke using Sharpies, different color Sharpies. It was just brilliant. Like, and what sucks about it is now I have to find time to do the homework for, you know, that I have to turn into the professor at next week's class, but at the same time prep the material I'm going to go over with him, because that's the thing. It's like I sent him a couple bits so he could go through it, but after we did the kind of intro to Who the Fuck You Are 101, you know, then we dove into it and it was great. We went through my dog rescue bit, which he really liked, but was really interesting. And he's not suggesting not to do crowd work or crowd interaction, but just be careful with it. And then there was also a couple things. It's like, you know, I do. Because every person in rescue I've ever dealt with is like my wife, you know, is a woman and blah, blah, blah. And so I have this thing like the women in rescue are crazy. My wife loves that bit. She stands by that line. At the same time, Mike's like, yeah, but somebody who has nothing to do with rescue might be looking to be mad. So don't give them the opportunity by gendering it. You know, and it's like, oh, you know, it's those little things that it's like, go ahead and say it, but maybe.
Whenever you put a negative connotation on anything with that involves a woman or, yeah, I got what you're saying. Yeah. Like, because it's like it's not like the crazy people happen to be women that do dog rescue. It's, oh no, crazy women do dog rescue.
And it is a true statement. But like at City Winery, I do that bit and I say, you know, these crazy women during rescue, and there's 12 girls night out at the front table. None of them are in dog rescue. None of them have rescued. But now you might have.
And of course, like you're making fun of these women who, sure, they might be, you know, overzealous or eccentric in their rescue, but they're still rescuing dogs. Like, it's just kind of like, look at these nice people who are doing kind things. Aren't they nuts? Anyway, fellas.
And the whole joke wasn't meant to be like that. It's meant to be, you know, women who do dog rescue are crazy. My wife has been doing dog rescue for 20 years, and then it's a personal thing. And so even though I tied into that, we just work, you know, so it's like now I've just changed that, you know, I've just changed it where it's like, you know, hey, look, people who do dog and cat rescue, oh, hearts of gold, batshit crazy, you know, I insist on saying women.
Right. Because that's the truth, man. And the truth has to be spoken by me, Captain Whitey.
And so it's just that kind of stuff when you get to one-on-one talk to somebody, you know, who's been doing this for 30 plus years. I'm spoiled. And so I did that on Tuesday. Then Friday, I'm hosting another, you know, McHugh show at a different Smitty's 2 hours away. And again, our good friend A really good friend in comedy and a good friend in life. Greg Bogus is on that lineup, which was exciting for me because I've known Greg for a couple years and I go to all his Luna shows if I can. He is the first person to put me up at a real show opening for Tony V. But I've never got to see him as a comedian, like do a full set. You know, it's always been a host, you know, type thing. And it was really great. At the same time, he is exactly almost a little less than halfway from point A to point B on a straight line. So we met at the carport, you know, a car, a Boston airplane shuttle thing where they, you know, a car park. Like, yeah, park and go. Thank you. And we drove the hour one-on-one. And again, to just be able to talk to somebody who's that funny, who's that great of a guy.
Right, well, you know, you don't have to bring me into the conversation, but, you know, Oh, you were talking about Jim. Yes. Okay. Got it. Okay.
So Greg was great. So last week it was, I got to drive to back and forth to the show with Jim. This week I got to drive back and forth with Greg. But just before I get in the car, Jim, who was going to do a 30-minute set or 20 to 30-minute set, he has so many things going on with, you know, a show, you know, coming up the next night. He has a big show today as we record this St. Patrick's Day, a really big show, and the festival. So he's like, yeah, I'm not going to make it, which gave me the opportunity to reach out to a couple friends. And like I've been saying, my goal for this year was to get to a point of trust with a couple of these people. Like I've hosted a couple of shows for Mike. Mike has put me up at 5 or 6 shows. I've hosted a couple of shows. Same with Jim. But I'm hoping to get to the point where I can say, hey, can we throw this person on? Can I, you know, do that? Are really, really, you know, Jen Howell, again, another comic on this show, she's done that for me specifically. There's been a couple times where I went to a show just to see it. She was hosting it. She was able to squeeze out like, you know, 7 minutes for me to go up. Probably before I was ready for that, yep. You know.
Right, you had a solid 2.
It's really, really, a really tight 1:20, yeah. But she's done that for other people. And it's great. So this opportunity came up and Wayne Russell didn't think he could make it just because of logistics. You know, he picks up the kid at this time, takes the kid home at that time. It's Friday traffic to get from there to there. It would almost time out, but it didn't look like it was possible. But he was so super grateful and thankful that I reached out. But then driving the kid home, the stars aligned. There was no traffic on the route that usually is bumper to bumper on a Friday. And he's like,
thankfully the Irish took the day off. You know what?
or they were in the drunk tank, you know, sobering up is what
you know
what
they used
say.
To call that? The paddy wagon.
Yes. Yes. Mm. They, you know, and it's like, you know, Irish on Irish crime where you have the cops throwing the.
Oh, the good old days. Right. You
know? The thin line between the drunk cop and the drunk guy.
The thin green line. Yes.
But he was able to make it. And he got up to the show. You know, he was solid, funny, fantastic. He opened the show. And, you know, that's the tough spot. They call it taking the bullet, you know, the opener. And so it was such a great night to be able to do that, to be able to have him, like, just hit a home run. And as you saw, you know, I was able to, you know, take a pot shot at his podcast partner, Anthony Eugenio. I showed you the clip.
Yep, that was funny.
Yeah. Which he posted. Like I said, like, I'm going to talk crap about this guy while he's not here, but I'm going to make sure I film it and send it to him so he knows I'm taking a shot at him, which he then posted, which I thought brilliant. Yep. But that was fun. And then last night, that was Friday. On Friday, before that show, I get a text message from my favorite comedian, Steve Bjork, who, when he was on our show a few months ago, the only guest to date who got the Carnival Personnel is a jerk reference.
Oh, yeah.
And we had just, you know, finished our new song, my partner in the music world, Dan Cray, and I, a song about Tucker Carlson, a love song from a uber Tucker Carlson fan to his hero.
Of course.
Tucker Carlson got fired from Fox 2 weeks after that song drops. You're welcome, America. Mm-hmm. And Steve texts me saying, I'm shooting my special tomorrow. Can I use Tucker as my walk-on music? My favorite comedian asking if he can use one of my songs for a taping of his show.
Yeah.
I sent it to Joe, and I'm like, and now I'm going to walk in front of a bus, so I go out on a high note.
And another broken promise, you know, just full of lies. This
and one. And I'm going to post that, but yeah, it was you, me, and the person who, you know, pointed me in the direction of Steve Bjork a decade ago, my sister, second time the three of us made a Bjork show, and I'd say last night was a win.
Yeah, I know. I your sister's a pleasant person, not as loud as all of the rest of your family. I like right. that. Very. It was a good time. And a little bonus. We hopped in the DeLorean back to the 80s and 90s because not only did we go to New Hampshire, which is stuck in the 90s, but they're so stuck in the 90s that they still have a Papa Gino's pizzeria. And that wasn't planned. We were just looking for a place to eat nearby because we had some time to kill. And we pulled into this plaza. And lo and behold, there's a Papa Gino's that didn't have a for lease sign on it. So it was like
the Payless shoes next to it.
Seriously, no joke. And we walked in and they served us a fine tasting pizza. And your sister joined us there. And it was a good time had by all.
But to see my favorite comedian walk out to my song was just like, dude, it was. And then what did he do? Oh, yeah. Destroyed a room again. And once his special drops, wherever it drops, I will be forwarding it relentlessly because and what I love is my sister knows his material where he ended with this brand new bit that I've never heard. Hold on, wait, what's this? My sister telling me, oh no, it's an old bit that he has
we did put hear.
Back into circulation, right?
Yeah, right, it's been that long. So like, it was literally like the last time that all the three of us got to see Steve Bjork at that Knights of Columbus attic show.
Was it you who's like, okay, think of the worst Knights of Columbus you know. Now this show is in the attic.
I think that I credit that to your sister.
Okay.
It was a charity event and it was fine. But yeah, Steve. That's what the first time I saw Steve was at that thing. And yes, he used that joke there. So yeah, it did sound familiar to me, and I didn't realize that you hadn't remembered it. But
no, but the whole brochure. I don't think he had the brochure and the brochure.
Yeah, he dug out the props. Yeah.
And look, I pitched a title for the special. We'll see if he takes it up, but it's got to be one or two, and I don't want to say what I pitched, but the other one is probably the best name for an 80s LA punk band that did that after the special drops I will be able to talk about it. That's it. You know, we had a fun, we took a weird side road back, took about a half hour, 40 minutes to get home. And that was our whole evening. No, it wasn't. Hold on. Stop the presses. Management was home. And yet Joe and I, with management, powered through another night of, hey, let's get in the old time machine. And was it on your Plex that you had the...
No, it was a YouTube clip that I cast to the TV, but I had texted it to you last month because when I stumbled upon it, I was like, oh, well, next time you and Ellen want to like take a trip down memory lane, this is the thing that you should watch. And it was the 1985 Year in Rock on MTV. It was an hour-long special that basically recapped everything that was awesome in music back in 1985. And of course, Duran Duran, even though they had broken up, featured heavily because they did their side projects, Arcadia and Power Station. So, and they also did A View to a Kill. They were on that soundtrack. So it was a big, despite them not being quote unquote together, it was still a big year for the Durans. Anyway, that was fun to watch. And they also, We Are the World started off that year in January of 85, which tied into us, you know, watching the We Are the World documentary that was on Netflix a little while ago. So that was great. Yeah, I mean, there's just a blast. And then we started like showing like Catherine Tate, the British comedian, clips, Doctor Who-esque type clips. You put up that sweet David Tennant surprise, like a special award that he received in England like years ago. And it was completely unexpected. They had the entire shot centered on him in the audience, not knowing what was going on. And then all of a sudden, like this, you know, he has a massive audience. And then all of a sudden they start playing this video package of all of the people that he'd work with, like praising him. And is like, what a great guy, a nice person, a wonder to work with and all that. And like, I think his eyes turned red from like holding back tears instantly, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, what's going on? And his wife, they just look like the most sweet, loving. It was really in a weary world that, and it's funny.
Soul shines a good deed.
You know him, you know, as a doctor. I, the last couple, you know, a couple years ago, season one of Good Omens came out by Neil Gaiman, which he is one of the two leads. And that's what I really know him for. But I am going to, you and my sister had talked quite a bit before the Steve show about certain aspects and episodes of him on Doctor Who that, I think I'm going to, you know, give it a watch.
The Doctor Who, he is my doctor. Like, because I didn't watch Doctor Who in the 70s and 80s. Tom Baker is a lot of people's, you know, he was the fifth doctor, and I think, right? Yeah. And he's the one with the long scarf that everybody, like the iconic 70s doctor
big,
with
big
the
curly
the
hair. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's a lot of people's doctor from that era. But I think a lot of people's doctor from this reboot era was David Tennant, the 10th doctor. But yeah. And recently on, I think they're all on Disney Plus now, but like recently the newer episodes, there's like four episodes that kind of dropped to continue that doc, that like David Tennant's version of the doctor had come back, and there's a couple of like, you know, tying up loose ends kind of thing, and also to introduce the new doctor who, so those are worth a watch as well. I mean, I personally haven't watched them, but I watched the last 5 minutes of the last David Tennant episode, and it was pleasant. But I mean, you are kind of missing out on some very good television. Yeah.
I hear that from sources I trust. Also, I had it at the very top of the show that I didn't mention that yesterday was my 10th anniversary.
Yes, happy anniversary.
And, you know, for anyone who hasn't heard me say this 1,000 times, you know, Joe was in my first wedding. Didn't work out so well, so we kept him away from this one.
Exactly. I wasn't the Danny Masterson wedding party.
You know, we didn't have to, you know, I mean, you want to go down the list of the guests there that, you know.
Hey, Epstein was a delight, you know. And then when Bernie Madoff, you know, toasted the crowd, it was, you know, I didn't expect Cosby to make a cameo. That was... And then Harvey Weinstein really, you know, brought the evening to an end. Anyway, your second wedding,
you know, simple thing on the beach. And I dressed as Han Solo. My 4-year-old dressed as Tim Drake Robin. I always make that distinction because, you know, Tim Drake is the best Robin. But Richard Grayson, who I named my oldest son after, dressed as Nightwing, my favorite hero. We had a friend who was dressed as Batman, one who was, you know, some people wore costumes. It was like last minute thing. And, you know, my brother John wore Bobby Orr's Oshawa Generals, you know, number 2 jersey, and it was fantastic. But it's the 10th year. You got to do something special for an anniversary present.
Yeah.
My wife's favorite show ever, and she watches it relentlessly. It's on in the background a lot. She acknowledges not all of it has held up, but Friends is her favorite show. It mm-hmm. meant so much to her in her 20s, really identified with it. That is her show. And there's an episode, long story short, where Phoebe is getting a tattoo with, you know, Monica, and Monica gets a tattoo. Phoebe chickens out. Phoebe goes back to get a tattoo, and then she does, and it turns out to be this tiny little dot.
I thought it was Rachel.
Oh, Rachel. Rachel got the tattoo.
Rachel and Phoebe.
And Rachel got her tattoo. Phoebe chickened out. Mm-hmm. Phoebe goes back. And in her defense, she was saying, you know, they use a needle and it really hurts. And Rachel says, do you think my tattoo was licked on by kittens? it's a great line. But then Phoebe says, well, I did get a tattoo. And she shows this tiny little blue dot on her, like, you know, bottom of her shoulder, you know, up her chest. And she says, you know, no, this is exactly what I wanted. This is the tattoo I wanted all along. This is a view of planet Earth from way, way out in outer space. This is how my mother sees me from heaven. And so I got tattooed on me the entire world for my wife.
Wow. The northern hemisphere. I mean, let's say the western hemisphere.
The western
right?
hemisphere.
Well, there's no Africa on that
no,
one.
No,
sure.
No, come on. We've established what a racist I am. So, you know what I mean? But
you'll be lucky to get the southern hemisphere in there. It's mostly North America.
You know, America. Thank you. Thank you. And I did. And I walked in. My little guy was with me. And so it cost $100. It's like there's a minimum. It's like, you know, if the guy's going to put on his gloves and fire up the needle, then it costs that. So I thought, you know what? While I'm here, because I'm a TV person, I got another TV-related tattoo. And I, growing up, I think, 81 Bosom Buddies came on?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like 80, 81 Bosom Buddies with the hotness.
I'm 11 to 12. And that was my show. That was my jam. And I always remember there was an episode where Tom Hanks' character goes to get a tattoo.
Drunkenly.
To impress a girl who lives in the building he lives in that he's madly in love with. So he's going to man up and go get this tattoo. And Joe had not seen the scene. And did you enjoy it once I brought it into your world? Can you unsee that magic?
No, and I don't want to. It was pleasant. It was like classic, you know, taped in front of a studio audience laughter, because I don't think that was sweetened. I think that was an actual like audience reaction where he goes into this tattoo shop that's kind of biker themed, and it's so much so that when you get your tattoo, you can actually sit on an actual motorcycle, and he's shirtless, of course, because he's getting his tattoo on his back. And he sits down, and you could tell he's playing drunk really well, like not over the top, you know, Foster Brooks style, you know, drunk. But he's also sharing the scene with Wendy Jo Sperber, who was on the show, and she's holding like the liquor bottle with the paper bag around it, and she's also half in the bag, maybe three quarters. And you know, yeah. So he's trying to be, you know, brave about it, and that's why he's all liquored up. And so he sits down. And the tattoo artist, you know, touches his back, and immediately he shrieks in pain. Ah! And he goes, "That's just the felt tip pen." And he goes, "Well, it was cold." And then he zips the needle, bzz, bzz, and he goes, "Oh, that's not so bad." And Wendy Jo Sperber goes, "Well, he hasn't touched you yet." And then he touches his back ever so gingerly, and he does this kind of like. Like if a T-Rex were shot in the back kind of pose. His arms go up, you know, he looks like he was mocking a reporter at some point.
Oh.
And he jumps out and runs out of the parlor screaming in agony. And yeah, so you finish up what's the epilogue to that story?
So he gets back to the hotel the next day. He's hungover, but the girl he loves is there, and he goes to show her his undying love and his commitment to their potential relationship by revealing the tattoo he got for her. And she lifts the shirt. She can't see it. She mistakes it for a mole and goes, "No, that's a love dot." So because I was spending $100 for a minimum, I got a love dot on my back.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. So I got it like 5 days before, you know, and Saturday was our anniversary. So I went out, you know, there's a tiny donut shop. I called them at like 5. They open at like 5 and they sometimes make this donut, sometimes don't. It's this butternut that my wife likes. Went, got it. Then, you know, served her breakfast in bed. When she came downstairs, the boys were there. And that's where I did the big unveiling. And it was great because a couple days before I was changing the living room and my little guy was afraid that, you know, she would see the bandage over like the tattoo. So he's like, yeah, pop, 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 sure. I was like, oh, it was nice that he was kind of in on that. But I revealed it. She could not have been happier. She was just, it was the reaction I had hoped. She thoroughly enjoyed because, you know, it's now the second tattoo I've gotten for her to show my undying love and commitment. The first one is the Hello Kitty tattoo. Which I have a bit about because she had jokingly pointed out she was being serious that I have other tattoos with victims before her, so I must have loved them more. So I literally went right out and got a Hello Kitty tattoo to match her Hello Kitty tattoo. So now I got this one. She's happy. And then she's
and
like,
immediately dump her to go see a show in New Hampshire.
Not immediately, but first, like, I gave her, I gave her the opportunity to kind of, she asked how much it was. I wasn't going to say, you know, my security leak son said it was $100, you know, because I usually get her Sephora cards. And she goes, I would have rather $100 Sephora cards. I'm like, would you? Because, you know, I'm going to have this forever. And you can tell everybody that, you know, I got this for you, which she did. And I said, well, because it was $100 minimum and she didn't know the Tom Hanks thing. So I tell her the Tom Hanks Booze and Buddies thing. And she instantly say, oh, so you got that tattoo for Joe. <You know? laughs> She just assumed that you were a big Booze and Buddies fan too. She didn't do the math. It's like, no, you're 4 when that show goes on. But she was, you know, and she assumes, wait, if he has Batman 66 and gets smart on his Plex, maybe he's.
I mean, she's not wrong. Like, they did air. I mean, I did watch an episode or two of Bosom Buddies. I like, you know, it was a more adult theme show. You know, it was about guys dressing in drag so that they could live in an all women's apartment building. You know, it was funny for the time, but you know, it didn't get a whole lot of play in reruns growing up.
I don't know if it made syndication.
No, it did.
It did.
I forget what channel in Boston played it. Maybe it would have been Channel 56, but it did. I remember Bosom Buddies airing for some time.
But her first instinct is like, oh, TV sitcom before Friends, that must be Joe's wheelhouse. that's your like tattoo for Joe.
So in her mind, you spent $50 on her and $50
on you. And then we abandoned her to go see the comedy show. Like I said, it's been such a run. And then the run's going to continue because as soon as I'm done with this podcast with Joe, I'm driving up to Portsmouth again to do another test live stream because, you know, Jim wants to be able to get a podcast up and running, a live stream up and running before the Boston Comedy Festival and be able to know. It's our third test run. It's all great. I got to say, I'm going to sidebar and I'm not going to mention any names. Mike Stewart. That's a callback to a guy that we did another recording with for a podcast. Anyways. I called Wayne when I had the opportunity to do this show, and he moved, you know, heaven and earth to get there and was so gracious of being able to do it. There's other people who, when this much bigger deal of, hey, you want to help Jim McHugh, who runs, he runs a half, you know, so John Tobin runs half of all New England comedy, and Jim McHugh probably runs 25% of the other half, and then Mike Katrobas probably runs 12% of that last 25%.
Fear not, world. Boston comedy is in good white male hands. So, you know.
You know, Joe, slow your roll. You forgot to point out they're all straight.
You know? Oh, yes.
So, and middle-aged. So,
silly me.
But we've had them all on. Anyways, and there's been a couple people, and it's just funny that one of the people I reached out to who's a content creator, who's a videographer, who turned his nose up at doing it, and I had talked about this with my car trip with with Greg. Greg must have said something to him, and he finally responded to a message from a month ago saying, oh, sorry, I didn't notice this message. Yeah, if you need to call me, you can, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, great. Hey, thanks for getting back to me. We figured it all out. But I did. It was just great that, you know, I'm focusing on the positive, the people who've been so amazing to me, and now the friends I've had. Like I said, it's great driving to those shows with those guys. It was great to, I knew the other comedian. I knew Greg pretty well. I knew one of the other guys on the lineup from doing a show with him in Maine. I did not know the headliner. He was fantastic, though. But it was great to share that night with a true friend, Wayne. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just focus on the positive. But yeah, so the comedy is going to continue. I'm going to go there. Jim has a big show tonight that I'm not going to go to. I can't go comedy four nights in a row. I can, right, if I wanted this to be my job.
And your last anniversary?
You know? But it's been so much fun. And again, Joe and I go to the Bobcat show, laugh, come home, watch all these shows. We, you know, last night we see Steve Bjork, come home, watch all these shows. And it was nice that management wasn't, okay, it's going to be Nerdfest, see ya. Because it was all in that wheel. Because like I said, you had the MTV thing.
That's how I roped her in. I was immediately, and good call, by the way, because I had forgotten what Yeah, I had sent that to you, and I go, oh yeah, let's play that. So that suckered her into like, oh yeah, maybe watching old TV clips isn't so bad.
And then she like delighted you because, you know, there was a big George Michael thing. She loved it. We talked about that documentary, and then she had the clip from the comedy show with Tate, again, the British
Catherine
show.
Catherine Tate, yeah, and George Michael.
You don't read the papers, do you, love?
Right.
Do you want my sex? And then that led to me doing the booze. And we did. We all took turns like showing, you know, marrying stuff from YouTube onto the TV. And then finally.
Oh, and we watched a clip a Saturday Night Live sketch with Josh Brolin.
Yeah, that was written by, you know,
more than
nephew,
likely so, yeah,
cousin. And
was that confirmed?
It was confirmed, yep. And it was, yeah, because my sister had talked about it when we went out, like, yeah, I always know a Jimmy clip. And it was one of those things where Joe got ready to leave. About 40 minutes later, you made it out the door.
Right. There was a lot of, time to hit the old dusty trail. And then, just one more thing. I just want to show you. My wife loves this clip. Let me show this to you. It was fine. I liked it. It was great. So I cherish every moment I can with friends. You know what? I consider family, you know, screw the blood stuff, you know, like, family are the people that you choose to.
But you made a half joke about, all right, fine, get the ice cream. And you know what? Your wish instantly became my command.
Yeah, I referenced getting ice cream whenever you watch something emotional that, like, you don't want to show your feelings. So you bury it under a mound of chocolate brownie and vanilla ice cream. And lo and behold, a big bowl of it appeared right before me. unrequested, but it was immediately consumed. So thank you.
So, I mean,
and
it
that
is.
Kept me up for another hour. So that was good.
Yeah. Well, you got to keep the blood moving. You're going to lose that right foot to diabetes, you know. But honestly, just talking about the laughing and the comedy that's been in our world the last few weeks, it's been great. It's really been a fun couple weeks. You know, I don't want to say the word professionally, but I've got these amazing opportunities the last few weeks. Didn't piss my pants too bad. And I think I'm going to get more. The end of this month, the whole week, I plan to help Jim with the Boston Comedy Festival. And by help Jim, I mean get to hang out with Michael Gross, the dad from Family Ties.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't want to jinx yourself. I mean, you assume that's going to happen.
Yeah, but, if it does, it does. And that's the whole thing. I've gone to shows, and now I got to remember, I'm going to see the show. Don't assume somebody is going to say, hey, do you want to go up? Just because it's happened so damn much the last few months.
You can't really, you know, expect these things, but be prepared is what I'm saying. You know, have a good 10 minutes or 5-7 minutes to go in your back pocket.
Or that solid two, as you said.
You can't lose the solid two.
I think the other day was the first time I posted a clip of my comedy on and I spent the $2 to get the caption app so it could be captioned. And it was the quick little, it was one of those 30 second, I'm hosting between comic 3 and 4, because Greg Bogus had made a joke about, you know, weed not being legal and the live free or die state. You know, you don't need a helmet to ride a motorcycle, but you can't, you know, have weed in a state where most of it's grown. And then, you know, it opened up to, you know, the joke I have that, you know, I don't do weed, but it's legal in Massachusetts. I don't gamble, but gambling's legal in Massachusetts. I'm waiting for them to legalize sex work. Cheap laugh. I don't judge those people. I'm not a Christian. Cheaper laugh. You know, I'm not bragging, but I'm not ashamed. I've done sex work. I was masturbating while driving for Uber. It counts. You know, and
see, yeah. That's a solid 30 right there.
Solid. With a couple of funny asides in there. You know what I mean?
And maybe a grain of truth. Maybe a grain of truth.
Did I drive for Uber at one point? Yes.
Were you masturbating?
Masturbated in the car? Yes. So, you know, do I gamble? No. Yeah. Do I do weed? No. So, I mean,
I think you're taking a gamble if you're masturbating in a car. Like, that's a. And only one of the gambling is legal now. So.
So, you know, we can pretty much wrap this up. You know, the only thing in the news, are you at all? Because I kind of been waiting to see if management was going to bring this up because she's such a royal watcher. But the whole Kate Middleton thing. It's pretty.
We had like a little bit of a tiff, my wife and I, over this, because I don't want to get it too far into it, but it's just like, okay, it is peculiar that photo was published, because, you know, I guess, you know, she'd gone through some medical procedure or some unknown surgery. Well, I don't know what it was, but she's in recovery. But people are like, automatically like, well, we haven't seen her in a while. What's going on? You know, are they keeping her from us for a reason? And so on Mother's Day in England, they posted this picture of her surrounded by her 3 children. But it was instantly like debunked, and then news organizations pulled the photo that had been published by the royal family because it had been clearly doctored and sloppily doctored. And so the next day, Kate Middleton took to Instagram or social media to basically fall on her sword and say, yes, I dabble in some Photoshop, and forgive me, this was a kind of a rookie attempt at me trying to, you know, clean up a photo and this, that, the other thing, and I apologize. So, but then I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, then A, why was it published? B, where's the original? Like, you know, and
the original photo or the original Kate,
right? So I mean, and then, you know, my wife was like, well, it's probably a composite of like they probably couldn't get the kids to sit still or something like that, so they had to composite a bunch of images together to make it look like the most pleasant version of that photo shoot, or whatever. And then, but then it's just like we got into this thing about how, well, you know, my wife was like, well, the public shouldn't be tearing her apart so much because, you know, she's under a lot of stress and it's none of people's business what she's going through medically. And, you know, this was put out in response to like it kind of haphazardly to kind of appease the public because of all the public pressure that they're put on. And I was like, well, that's fair. But at the same time, why, if they're going to put something out like that, of course it's going to be scrutinized. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. And, you know, it comes down to like privacy versus, you know, when do you respect public people's privacy and all that stuff. And it's like, well, okay, it's, yeah, but they're the royal family. They're going to be subject to scrutiny, more so. And I get that it's kind of like leave Britney alone kind of thing. You know, we don't want to like, you know, impede too much upon.
So my wife, here's first of all, conspiracy theories need that semblance of truth. And the more truthiness around a good conspiracy, it which really makes it grow and fester. And the fact that she hasn't been seen in a while, and the fact that, oh, she hasn't been seen, but here's a photo of her. Wait a minute, that photo's doctored. I mean, it just lets it spiral.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also like it echoes the David Miscavige's wife from Scientology, like, you know, like she hadn't been seen in years. Like there's like a legit like worry there about that she might be in danger or whatever, you know. And so, yeah, that when there's a lack of transparency on such a benign level like that, like when it
Well, with her, because I was at the meeting, she ascended to the next level. So she's back on Sino.
So okay, so she's fine. Super clear.
She's super clear. We're good on that. No, we talked about that at the meeting.
All right. Well, give Zeno's my luck.
You haven't paid enough for classes in order for me to extend that message of your love.
You know, I've been trying to work on my thetans.
But yeah, but what my wife really focuses on, and it's true, she showed me this little mini documentary, Margot Markle, and I can't say her name right, the actress.
Oh, Meryl Marco.
Meryl
Marco.
Meryl
Marco was the comedy writer for Letterman. Who are you talking about?
The other princess of, you know, the other brother's wife.
Oh,
the actress.
Now you got me thinking Meryl Marco.
The actress from Suits.
I know.
But so they had to leave England. If you knew how bad they were under fire, and it was just so disgusting. I'll give a quick example. There was a picture of Kate Middleton at an event before she had her first child, walking with her husband, and she's holding her baby bump. And the front page of the Sun was, look at what a great mother she's going to be. She's already nurturing the baby inside. She's going to love this baby so much. Aren't we so lucky that she's, you know, our princess? There was almost the same photo from the same angle at a different event where she's, you know, Merkel is holding, you know, her hand over her belly, standing next to her prince of a husband, not being sarcastic. And look at her calling attention to herself, making it all. It was just nasty. The same paper, and this little documentary the wife showed me, it's all apples for apples. It was like, Kate Middleton did this on this day, and this is reaction. She did this, or she didn't do this, but this is what they thought. And so they had to leave there. But can you imagine if she was missing for 2 months?
Oh my God. Yeah. The parades they would have. Oh no, I'm sorry. People don't like her, or at least some people that don't like. Anyway, Meghan Markle is who you're talking about.
And the host from England who came over here to try to host a TV show, who didn't do well, who went back over there.
Oh yes, Piers Morgan.
Piers Morgan. He's made his career like shitting on her the last decade.
Because he wanted to fuck her.
You know, right.
And she got shot down. He got shot down essentially. I think that's the word on the street is that when she was not.
Right. And so the only other news thing is, and you and I talked about quickly, we're not going down the political rabbit hole, but Sleepy Joe has been Sleepy Joe for 6 years by that side. And he gives a really great, passionate State of the Union. So now Sleepy Joe is on drugs.
Right. He got into Hunter Biden's stash.
When do we see his nudes? When do we see Joe Biden's nudes? Nobody's asking, but I'm just
right. You know, maybe some. You know,
some
people might look at him as a zaddy.
Do not look up the term. And I'm stealing from John Stewart. Back in the day, he referred to somebody as Lemon Party Johnson.
Oh, I know what that is.
and he goes, if you don't know what it is, don't look it up. I know you're gonna go look it up. I apologize.
I like how when people bring up like an obscure, probably racy term, and they go, don't look it up. Do yourself a favor. Don't look up this very salacious term that might pique a curiosity in you to go look it up. I'm just going to mention it out of context. And then you kind of maybe come to your own conclusions. I'm not advocating you go to Google and look and put in quotation marks, Lemon Party, and then hit enter and then see what pops up and make sure that the safe search is off.
And so, you know, that let's wrap it up. What are you watch other than the stuff on the Plex, the Get Smart and the Batman 66 and the Streets of San Francisco we watch when you come over? What are you watching that you would give a recommendation for now?
Oh, gee, God, you put me on the spot here. What have I been watching that isn't embarrassing? Oh, no, that's not it. I did mention to you briefly. So I'm going again. I'm spending a lot of time like going on YouTube and like looking up like made for TV stuff from the 80s, like the kind of the obscure rabbit hole type things that aren't, you know, available on Max or Netflix. And I stumbled upon and I'm probably going to put this on my Plex, Sorry, I know you wanted the mainstream recommendations, but I'm giving you a thing that you're not going to get because I had to torrent this. It's not even available on YouTube. It's a 2-hour comedy special from 89. It's called like the Comedy Club Special, and it was put together by George Schlatter, who produced Laugh In, and it was a showcase of comedians, you know, from the scene from all parts of America. So like they did like, it was almost like short attention span theater style. Remember that show on Comedy Central where they would show like little yep. bits of comedy routines? They would do that like in Boston, Chicago, LA, New York. But it had like, it was hosted by Dudley Moore. And then they would cut to, you know, Barry Crimmins doing a routine in Boston. They would do Emo
Phillips. The hero, Barry Crimmins.
Yes, and we're not saying that facetiously. But then they also had like, but then they had like a really obscure acts. You know, but you know, obviously they had the kings of. They had like Belzer. They had Judy Tenuta. You know, there was a couple of names I haven't heard of. Remember the legendary Wid?
Vaguely,
he's like a prop comedian.
Yeah, right.
Like with a nerdy guy with glasses, kinda. And he had like, it was a prop comic, but like I hadn't seen him in eons. I haven't even like that name like unlocked many memories when I saw that. But that I had watched that and I was like, wow, there's a lot of prescient. You know, there were the topics that were talked about then as being problems in America that have not been solved in 30, 40 years. That could still be, you know, held up today. So that's been pretty interesting. But yeah, as far as like modern stuff goes.
No, as soon as that's on the Plex, I'm going to watch it.
What are you watching?
I'm watching, and I'm, again, surprised your wife hasn't jumped on this solely because it's a period piece and the costuming is great. R. Flack Means Death.
Yeah.
And it's a pirate love stories comedy by the absolute genius, like over the last 20 years,
Taika Waititi.
Few people have done what he has done in film and television. The things that he's created. I mean, he's been part of the Marvel universe. He's been part of this. He's done other movies, but What We Do in the Shadows now that, and he other series that he's created movies. But this, it's the second season, and it's done. And it's like Ted Lasso or so many other things. You could spin something off. You could, like, there were so many great characters that could be spun off this way or that way. But the main stories tied up very nicely. I'm surprised that there was ice cream left in the house. A lot of those. What do people call those? Feelings.
Yes.
Feelings.
Could you stand another box of Kleenex?
Another box. I mean, it's like, oh, okay, this is how we're going to end it. You know what? That's pretty good. Oh, no, that's not. We're ending it like that. Oh, just beautiful. Mm. Absolute beautiful. But again, you know, it's British-based comedy or, you know, Kiwi-based comedy, yeah. You know.
You're right, exactly. Careful there. They're two different countries.
Two different countries, you know, set in the Caribbean, like, you know, the age of pirates. It's great. It's great. Leslie Nielsen has, you know, a pretty good,
Liam,
you know.
You said Leslie Nielsen?
Saturday Night Live.
Leslie Jones.
Thank you, Leslie Nielsen. You know, I thought funny, and instantly I thought a, you know, older, white, straight guy.
Who loves fart machines.
You know, let a rip. I finished it. It's great. Could not be happier. Like I said, if they bring it back, they do something, it's like, it probably could be okay. I'll give it a watch. But it was so beautiful how they ended it. There you go.
Right. Yeah, and I recommended Ghosts to you. I think I talked about that last time. Yeah.
Yep. You know, the wife. Yeah. I'm done for this podcast, so you can talk a little bit about Ghosts, and then wrap it up.
Get the wrap sign ready. Here we go. He's leaning back, out of shot, and he's got the wrap sign at the ready. So there it is. Wrap it up. Ghost, I've watched a couple of episodes of a CBS show that's based on the UK comedy about a couple who buy a castle-ish type of, you know, place in kind of the woodsy area, and they're going to turn it into a bed and breakfast, but it's inhabited by ghosts. But it's ghosts from different periods, and it's a funny show. You should watch that. I think that's all I got to say about that. So yes, an embarrassment of comedy riches the past month. So I thank Jacques for his hospitality, his friendship, his love, his dedication to the craft of comedy. You know, I think a lot of people get douche chills when they say craft and comedy at the same time. But you know what? I mean it. It really is a craft. And I don't mean like craft cheese, like processed shit. I'm talking about real, like stuff you hone over years, decades even. And Jacques is just getting started. You know, you wait and see. When he's 75, he's going to be like the new Rodney. People are going to be asking, where's Jacques? Instead of, where's Rodney? That's how popular he's going to be. Just you wait. If they do a back to school remake in 15 years, don't be surprised if Jacques Lambert isn't the star, or is the star. Anyway, you know, it's, yeah, I can't wait to see what the next month or so holds for us in the comedy world. By us, I mean you, and then I just sort of tag along because I am a parasite, a leech, a bottom feeder, a slime. I have a lot of self-esteem issues that I'm not addressing, but you know, I'll air out here and make people who listen uncomfortable. maybe that's why I don't have a lot of friends. Maybe like, if I dump a lot of, I open up way too fast to new people that come into my life, and then they are put off by me, and they say, you know what, hey, that's too bad that you feel that way. I'm gonna go have fun over here. I have a life to lead. I'm gonna go over here. You work that out, Joe, on a podcast with your friend. So that's what I do every other week. But yes, tune in next week for the Tony V show. A couple of weeks after that, we have another guest. I don't know if we want to announce him yet. We will announce it. Dave Radigan, right? Yeah. Dave Radigan, yes. Yes. Another great comic. Dick Bucks are mentioned as well in that episode. We're keeping the Dick Bucks theme going. We're trying to get every ex-Dick Doherty comic on our podcast. It's great. It's amazing what the kind of little community you've cultivated with our fledgling podcast of 8 years, right? 8 years, 2017, 7 years, but who's counting? Certainly not me, because I don't know how to count. But again, happy anniversary to you and your betrothed. You know what? I also have an anniversary coming up in a few months, our 25th anniversary. Yes, the big 25. That's right. Yes. You know what I'm getting her? Walking papers, baby. No, that's what she's getting me. I spoiled the surprise. Sorry, honey. I looked in the drawer. I saw the papers post-dated for our anniversary date. Oof. Oh, my God. How dare you? Anyway, I kid because I love and because I'm wired on coffee. We're recording this on a morning, late morning, because I slept in, because I got home late last night for some reason. I forgot why I got home at 2 a.m. No, it's because I was having fun with my friends. Hopefully there'll be more nights like that to come in the future. So until then, enjoy the music, enjoy your week. Tune in next week for the great Tony V. If you missed that episode, then I guess you just don't like fun. You don't like to laugh. You don't like America. And you know, have fun with Putin. you commie bastard, you. I got a why. Bang, zoom to the moon. Anywho. They tell me to rap. I said they're telling me to rap. There it is. And on that note, Jacques and friends, don't forget,